Well, I thought maybe I'd give you a Cohen this morning, and then give you a few minutes to reflect on it and see what you come up with. And I don't want to actually say too much about it this week. I just want you to kind of settle with it, and then maybe next week we'll talk about it. So here's the Cohen. So Deng Shan, who's one of the great seminal Zen teachers back in China, is not feeling well. He's sick. And one of the monks goes to Deng Shan to visit him in his room. And he says to him, you know, after he says, "I'm sorry you don't feel so well, I hope you're feeling better," he says, Is there one who is well? Is there one who is well? Pretty clear that there's one who's not well, right? You can see him, he's suffering. Is there one who is well? And Deng Shan, the teacher, says, "Yes, there is one who is well." And the monk says, "Does that one look after you? Does the one that is well, does that one look after the one that is not well?" And Deng Shan, I think, probably surprises the monk. He says, "I look after him. I, the one who is unwell, actually look after the one who is well." And the monk says, "How is it with you when you look after him? When you look after the one, you know, who is well?" And Deng Shan says, "There I don't see he has any illness." A little bit of a flip. You could just use the first two sentences, actually. Probably the first two phrases are the most important. So what do you think about that, Cohen? What is that Cohen trying to say?
I didn't hear the last.
What was it?
The last sentence is, he says, how is it when you look after him? How is it when the one who is sick looks after the one who is not sick? And he says, "There I don't see he has any illness." I wouldn't focus on that phrase so much. I mean, but what about the first two verses? What does that mean?
Can you say the first two phrases again?
What does it mean when he says, "There is one who is not sick"?
I'm not clear who's saying which lines. Could you?
You don't be too logical with it. Right? You know, that's the whole thing about koans. Don't try to. You can't get a koan that way. You're trying to do it through your normal way of thinking. Are you sick? Yeah. God, I feel horrible. Is there one that's not sick? Yeah. There is one that is not sick. Who's the one that's not sick? Do you know the one that's not sick? Do you know that one? How do you find that one that's not sick? What is that like? Is that possible? Do you know that within yourself? Well, does the one that's not sick take care of the one who's sick? Right? That makes sense. I mean, you know, don't you want the well doctor to come in and take care of the sick patient? That's what you want, right? You want the well part of you to turn to the non-well part and say, "I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to show you what it's like to not be sick." That makes sense, right? But Deng Shan goes totally the other way. He says, "No, the one who is sick takes care of the one who is not sick." Wow, what does that mean? What do you think that means?
Well,
I mean, what do you think about the first one? Do you know the one of you that's not sick when you're sick? And what about the other one? How can the one that's sick take care of the one that's not sick?
Is that really what he's saying? That the one who's sick is taken care of? Or is there someone else who's neither sick nor not sick?
Well, that's an interesting point.
Doesn't he say that when he says, I'm the one?
What do you think? Say something more about that.
Well, what I was hearing was the one who's neither sick nor not sick takes care of the one who's not sick.
Uh-huh. Kind of like more like we're not trying to just hang out in the realm where we're not sick, and we're not trying to hang out in the realm that's sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Any other take on it?
I'm satisfied with that.
You like that one?
I do.
So the last sentence seems to say that a little bit. He says, how is it when you look after him? How does the one that's sick look after the one that's not sick? How does that happen? It just doesn't seem possible. And then he kind of flips it. He says, there I don't see that he has any illness. But he's still in the place where he's ill. He hasn't forgotten his illness, you know. Well, anybody else want to make... There's a few more things you could say about it. How about the one where it just says, who is the one that is not sick? How about the first line? Does anybody want to say anything about that? You had to give a... So if you were to work this koan on your own, the first line, you could just work the first line of the koan, right? Who is the one that's not sick? So when you're sick and you're laying in bed, and all you think is, it's all I am is sick, you say the phrase to yourself, who is the one that's not sick, right? When you're, we've been talking about fear. So when you have a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety and fear, you repeat the phrase, who is the one that doesn't have anxiety? Who's the one that, what do you mean? I'm one big body of anxiety. Who's the one that doesn't have it?
The one who's not identified with the body.
Pardon?
The one who's not identified with the body.
Yeah. But going back to Larry's phrase, though, there's a little bit of a danger in that, right? And the danger is?
Well, disidentifying from the body is also not real.
Yeah, exactly.
And sick and not sick are both impermanent states.
That's true. Who is the one that doesn't have fear? So, you know, my back goes out occasionally. I never quite know when it is. It's always a little bit fragile, right? And I never quite know when it's going to go. And sometimes I overdo it. Like this weekend, I took a couple of pretty rigorous, real steep climbs, you know, so I don't, and the next day I'm going, ooh, what's going to happen here? So far, so good. But I never quite know it. And I get, and when you go through a few of these bouts and you're in it, like last summer I was really in it, there's a part of you that wonders if you're going to get out the other side. Anybody ever have back problems? You get through it, and there's a lot of fear and contraction. And you think, well, maybe this time it won't be impermanent. You know, there are people running around with permanent back pains that are, you know, all crippled, and they have to get back fusion. And then your mind starts doing this whole thing, oh, I'm headed for back fusion. And what's it like to have back fusion? You know, you're like... So we all have been in that place, right? Are we going to get through this? And you can begin to feel the storyline accelerating. That's why I was reading the first thing about the, you know, you can look at the tigers. There's tigers. You know, how do you get out? How do you see something more than the tigers? That's what the Cohen's talking about that a little bit, right? Who is the one that's not sick? Who remembers? There's another Cohen I gave you about a year and a half ago. that's almost identical to this koan. Who is the one? Remember, that's how it actually starts. Instead of who is the one is not sick, it is who is the one. It's a famous koan. Remember? Do you know what it is?
No.
Okay. No.
Who is the one that's not busy? Remember that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Right? So the guy's out there sweeping like mad. What are you doing? I'm sweeping like mad. And the teacher says, who is the, you're really busy. This is great. You're really energetic, right? This is good. You know, you should be that way. Bring energy up to what your work is. But the, and the teacher says, who is the one that's not busy? What are you doing? I'm really busy. I'm doing, who is the one, he says to him, who's the one that's not busy? You know, so that's the phrase, you know, that's really a good one to use with, you know, workaholics. You know, I've got to work. I mean, I've got to do this and I've got to do that and this needs to get done and that needs to get done and, you know, things are going to fall apart if I don't do it. Yeah, well, but who's the one that's not busy? Who's the one inside you that doesn't have to, isn't on this treadmill? Can you find that person? So when we sit in our meditation practice, that's what we're doing. We're trying to find that we're trying to find that part of ourselves that's more than our busyness, that is so driven by our busyness. And we're trying to find that person that isn't sick. And so it's really important to try to find that person in our sitting practice before we get really sick. Because if we try to find it when we're really sick, we're too contracted to find it. We can't find it. So if we can find it, if we can sit, and we just have a little discomfort in our leg, last 10 minutes, right? It's just kind of painful and you want to move. But if you just can sit with it, that doesn't mean you shouldn't move, but you just sit with it a little bit. And so you have the pain, but you can find a place where you're okay with the pain. You can stay with it. And you just do it at that level. And then, if you can find it at that level, you know, and then, you know, you can set a sesshin, and then you actually have more discomfort. The challenge is a little greater, right? You try not to move. And it's not like some stoicism, you know, it's like, I'm grin and bear this pain, I'm going to grin and bear this sickness. That's not the person, you know, who doesn't have sickness. That's not it. It's the person that can find the place where you're more than sickness. So we're so identified, it's kind of like Pima was saying at the beginning, we're so identified with whatever that reality is. I've got to have, I can't have, this has to get away, or I need that. You know, who is the person that's free of that? Sure, that's there. You know, so it's a little like what we were saying about you're more than your body. That's really a correct statement. You're more than your pain. So you meet people that are in pain, psychological pain or physical pain, and they're, you know, a phrase that I've always found kind of useful, it's like they're their pain body. All they are is their pain. And I know a lot of people, I've been in that place where all you see is the pain. There's nothing else, you know. And that's a hell realm, you know. How can you see more than that? How can you see that there's more than just the tigers above or the tigers below? How do you see more than, you know, the real reality of this?
And also, so, how do you see that there are tigers and not just strawberries?
Yeah. That koan probably, that's actually a Zen koan that Pima, you know, used in her tradition, but that's a pretty famous koan. Yes, you know, if you ignore the fact that there's pain and you don't pay attention to your pain and you don't go to the doctor, you know, that's, you're dissociating, and that's a huge problem. Let's dissociate from the fear and the pain, and let's, you know, how can we be with it? But we still haven't actually got to the heart of what this thing is actually saying. That's the first part, that's the first line, and so that's just, that in itself is a complete koan, and I would give that to you as a way to work that koan. Is, you know, who is the one that is not sick? You know, you ask yourself, who's the one that's not sick? Who's the one that's not, doesn't have pure fear? And then you have to be careful that what this isn't is some kind of spiritual bypass where you're going to some blissed out state where you're not paying attention to the part that's fear, that has a lot of fear and anxiety, or has a lot of pain. You're not dissociating from it. You feel it, you're with it, but you're watching the storyline around it, and you're not totally buying into the storyline. But what about the other phrase? How can the one that is sick, how can that be taken care of? See, the first one you would think it would be saying, how can this person that's not sick take care of the one that's sick? Because that's really true. You're sick, you're a pain body, and you want to see that you're more. You want to relax, right? That really makes sense, that the one who is not sick takes care of the one that's sick. But why does he say, no, I take care of the one that's sick? No, I mean, the one that's sick takes care of the one that's not sick. What's that mean? That's the real flip side on this koan. That's what makes it really an interesting koan.
One thing that comes to mind in this moment is that the one who takes care of the one that's not sick is the one who's looking toward that which is neither sick nor not sick. The one who has his or her eyes on the prize.
His or her
eyes on the prize, which is not sick. And it's outside of not sick and sick. Same thing Larry said.
Okay. Well, it's in this realm. So what he's saying is, he's clearly in this place, the one that's sick isn't just totally sick and doesn't see anything else.
Right.
What he's saying is that there's an opportunity here. It's like you don't get to see the person that is not sick except through being sick. That's what he's saying. That's how you take care of the one that isn't sick, is by paying attention to really entering the sickness. If you really enter the sickness and see that the sickness is not separate, you cannot, it isn't like this is this and this is this and you go over here. You have to enter the sickness. But you don't lose yourself in the sickness. You practice with the sickness. And it's only in practicing the sickness and having sickness and having fear and having discomfort that you can find the one who is not sick. That's what's so beautiful about this, really great about this koan. And then the fourth line kind of integrates it and says, it goes back to the kind of the first line where it says, in this place, I see really, I'm more than just sick or not sick. I'm not dissociating from my sickness. I'm using my sickness. But I'm not lost in it. I can see that I'm more than this.
There's a phrase that you sometimes hear among mental health professionals, which is, thank goodness for my patients. It's a way of saying how much, if you have trained to serve sick people, you need sick people. And in your service to sick people, there's something that can happen to the one who is theoretically not sick that is very enriching. And it's a gift from the sick person to the one who is not sick.
Right. Exactly. And so that's where real healing happens.
Well, that's part of it.
What was your comment?
It's also a paycheck.
It's a paycheck.
The what?
It's a paycheck.
Oh, I see. Okay. Let's not quite go there yet. Let's elaborate on this a little bit. Yes. And to take that, which is harder for healthcare professionals to say, is the phrase, we're a wounded healer. And that we are healing ourselves. And then at that point, it's not like this. It's this way, and you join with them, in a sense. You know, you have some perspective, but they feel that you understand the nature of suffering.
And isn't that what compassion means, is sharing the suffering?
And that's where real, that kind of mutuality is where you know, that's what you're saying. And if people can go to that level and realize this is benefiting you, not just the paycheck, but especially not just the paycheck. That's absolutely true. And that's really a deeper level of it. So when you're sitting with somebody that's in pain, if you think you're the one that doesn't have pain and they have pain, and you're in hospice work, they can see that. They can feel your detachment from the process. On the other hand, if you're totally lost and all you can feel is your pain and their pain, and you can't give any perspective, you lose that, then that doesn't help either. You cope people at some level. So this is such a great poem. It is such a great koan, right? It's like you could really say it. Who's the one that's not sick? But then you got to be careful, because then you can do that little phrase that I like a lot, a spiritual bypass. I'll just go into meditation and get away from the sick. I'm going to find the one that's not sick. I'm going to heaven. That's hell. I'm going to heaven. And that's not what our practice is. That's what's so great about Buddha's practice. It's really, just really, yeah.
The one who's sick takes care of the one who is not sick by taking the meds and going to bed and steaming and resting so that the sickness gets well.
That would be an absolute part of it. That person would go and take care of their body and eat well and go to the doctor. All that stuff.
Rest.
Yeah. And, of course, this is emphasizing us on a very practical level, which, our practice is both on the material level, on the form level of form, which is kind of that way. We actually pay attention to our body and our pain. We don't go away from it. And it's finding that place in our practice where it's still. It's still. That there, the dialogue around it. We've worked with the dialogue enough. Here it is. I'm going into it again. I can see. I'm just going to be my back pain, and all that fear. And I'm watching that fear. I'm watching that fear. And it doesn't go away. The fear of death doesn't go away. But you hold it in a different way. There's a part of you that you're more than death, more than the fact that you're just death, or pain, or sickness, or fear. So great, it's a great. I wonder if you could help me a little bit. We have a few minutes left. I wonder if you could fill out do a little evaluation for me. I'd like to do this periodically.
Do you have writing implements?
Yes, I do. I have some. I have some very sophisticated writing implements. I have some golf pens here. All of you are golfers, I know. These actually bring up a lot of memories because both my parents were golfers. Their idea of how I should practice is be a professional golfer. I never told you that. So I did, this isn't just the first part is kind of help me out. Sometimes when I give lectures, it's really helpful to get questions. And so I thought if you could write just to meditate for a few minutes. And again, you don't have to put your name on this. It says on that. You can read it. If you want me to get back to you about a question, I'll call you and we can set up a period. But that's not why I'm really sending this out. I just want you to think about your Buddhist practice or an issue that would, it's more to help me. Like, what can I give a lecture about? Fear. Okay, I'll give a lecture on fear. I'll go and think about it and bring Buddhist principles. Or maybe there's something that you, a lot of times, people have questions about practice and they're afraid to ask it because it's so, it seems so elementary. They don't want to expose their lack of understanding. This is a pretty common, I mean, we all have that feeling. I have that feeling.
Bruce, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's a very dumb functional one.
Oh,
three,
those are the best.
5 and 6, I have no idea what that's referring to.
That means, which ones?
3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yes, I need to explain that. Okay. What that means, with some explanation, is that probably it would work better for me to switch to an evening and not Sunday. This is pretty radical. I've been doing this for 15 years on a Sunday. So I'm asking you, I may be surprised. I may actually find out that most of you would like to switch. So the first question I'm asking, I'm trying to ask this right way. Would you prefer to meet on a weeknight? Forget about which weeknight. Just assume that whatever weeknight, just any weeknight, would be better than on a Sunday.
Sorry. Are you talking about the Sunday sitting? You're considering asking us about the Sunday sitting, not the Wednesday morning class or the sitting or the when you have a class.
Yeah.
This Sunday time.
This Sunday time. Would you prefer, would it work better for you to work on a weeknight? If it would work better for you on a weeknight, which times? From 7 to 8:30 p.m., from 5 to 6:30, 5:30 to 7. Okay. Oh, and maybe the fourth one I'm realizing, even if you didn't want to go,
okay.
Even if you did, because it is, we're not going to get 100% on this, right?
If it's going to.
So even if you would, and we did switch, then which time would be best for you, and which night would you prefer?
Okay.
Yeah. If you would prefer a weeknight, what weeknights would work for you? And which ones would not work for you? Yeah.
Do we need to consider the place?
No, because I don't have a place. It may be. This is the first step, and then we'd have to find a place, and we may not find a place that's compatible or open. But if it turns out that there's a fair number of people that they prefer this, then I'll start looking. This is not at the place where we have to do this.
No,
you know, we're not at that place.
Is it? May I ask? Is it your personal preference, or does it have to do with financial arrangements where we are now, or what is? I mean, what is the?
No, it's more around my family, around Chris, us being able to spend more time, like freeing up the weekends. Yeah, it's more around that issue. Right now, at some point, it could be another issue. You know, if for example, at the teen center, ends up canceling too many of our Sunday meetings. And this is in a place like this isn't available. But mostly, I wanted you to focus on number one. Just reflect on. What are some questions? Just come up with a question, and that'll help me. Then I'll start, if I get four people with the same question, I'll just start to cycle through and answer these questions. I'll work them into my lectures. You're helping me. Especially, I said, as people, some of you have been sitting with me for a while, and you have these burning questions, about Buddhism, like, can Buddhists believe in God? Some question like that, right? What is God in Buddhism? What does unconditional nature of mind mean? What's the real difference between Theravadan practice and Mahayana practice? Did Buddha really exist? This is the thing I've always had trouble with in Buddhism, this particular thing, ritual. I just have a hard time with the ritual component Could you go back and try to talk a little more about ritual and why that, what's the upside and downside of it? What would you like to see more or less of? More chanting. Like that chanting. Don't like that chanting. Just gives me a little something to steer on other than just, you know, what I like to, you know, it's good for me to respond. It takes a little skill to write with these pencils, doesn't it? So.
It takes some skill to read, too.
To read?
To read it, because it's so faint.
Kind of a colon, huh?
Yeah.
Could have been,
guess what we're saying.
Could have been a little clearer, okay. Okay, well, that's some feedback. Thank you.
So are these antique pencils from your mother and father?
No. That's a really, actually, a pretty darn good question because, you know, my initial answer to that would be no. But I'm not sure. I actually have an old golf bag downstairs that I may have pulled out. I don't think so, though. I think I bought them somewhere. I've had them so long. I've really had them a long time. I think I've sharpened to be there 15 years. That's a good question. That'd be pretty formidable if they were, actually. I don't know the history. I can't remember the history.
Today, though, they have reached their fruition.
Oh, this is true. Who would have thought the evolution
reason
of these
for being
pencils would be? I've been using them in workshops, though. So this, yeah, they've had that. Okay. Thank you. I'll do this for next week too, just to get people that aren't here, and maybe.
I hope everybody can get lost, forget.
Thank you. Who is the one that is not sick? Who is the one that's not busy?
You know, Polonius said, I think it was Polonius.
Who did?
In Hamlet, beware a busy man.
Beware
a busy man.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a really good quote to use in a lecture. Next time I do the one who is not busy, to use that. That's right. That's what he's saying.
Question?
Yeah.
Gavin, you would like us to sign this?
No, you don't.
Not use your name.
Yeah, you don't have to. Unless you want, like some people have a personal question and you want me to contact you to set up a practice instructor or something, then put your name down.
But you will know who wrote each one of them.
The what?
You will know who wrote each one of them.
I hadn't actually thought that. Do you think so?
Well, you know us.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I hadn't actually thought that that's true. But when I'm reading it, I'll... Yes, there will be a part of me that will say, I wonder who wrote this. And there, and at least probably a good part, I will. Maybe I'll. But I didn't thought that was the case, actually. I meant it to be more, give you a sense of... Because I wanted you to also be critical on this, too. Did you get that? I wanted you to say what you didn't like about the Sangha. Did you? You want to take these back?
No.
Okay. You know, I wanted you to give me some feedback.
I'll take mine back, but you've heard it before, but I want to say something else.
Yeah, I wanted you to say what worked. Yeah, I like to do this periodically because then, it's not like we're going to vote. Or we're not going to do chanting anymore. But if everybody, you know, 3/4 of the people said, we don't do chanting anymore, then I'm open to that. I wanted to do what works. It's always kind of a mix, you know, between knowing that when you push into something different, you're going to meet resistance. That's always true with Zen forms. People initially do not like them, most people. Like bowing is usually, it's so discordant with what we culturally go for. But then my experience is people do it and take it on. It's tremendously helpful.
Yeah,
how's your...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Weekends are hard because of my job. Weekends are hard because of my job.
Uh-huh.
So Sundays are... If you switch, I'm okay with that.
Oh, okay.
Because everything for me happens Saturday and Sundays, and I can't go to meditation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that... I think I can answer this question. How many people here have a... either neutral or a slight preference to switching to a weekday?
To a weekday?
Yeah, a weeknight. A weeknight.
Neutral or...
Neutral or a little bit of a positive. Okay, so that's
positive.
Two. How many? Yeah, three? Yeah. Okay. How many people actually prefer Sunday?
Three.
So that's interesting. It's almost half and half, but a little more on the side.
Many of us. Thank you for letting us our input.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Our before we end, do the end intention. Is there anything anybody would like to share about summer? Anything come up for you that would be inspiring for the rest of us? Poignant?
Inspiring, something that's happened.
Yeah, something that happened or moved you or want to share? Yeah.
I've changed.
You changed?
Tremendously.
Oh.
I went from this person that was always busy to this person that's not always busy, and I'm actually enjoying it. And then I look back and I go, whoa, how did I keep that up? For so long.
Uh-huh.
So it's been like 2 years since I sold the old house. Didn't sell the house, but moved to the new place.
Yeah.
Started a new garden. Just now the phones hardly ring. I can actually sleep in the morning if I have to. And there's not 3,000 people calling me every day. And I'm actually liking it.
Yeah.
I'm settling into it. And it's amazing.
Contemplative existence. Some people really fight that. You know, they have to be busy to prove themselves, right?
So I was going to die if I didn't. I mean, it was like an eye-opener.
Yeah.
You're going to die anyway.
Well, yeah, but I mean, why accelerate it? I mean, it was like...
anybody else have any insight or anything?
I'm going to house it for some friends that live pretty remotely. I've done that before and I didn't stay as long as I had anticipated. Uh-huh. I left. I thought I had a good excuse that my house sitter had to leave. I don't really need a house sitter. But
uh-huh.
So now I'm going again in the beginning of August.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to try to stay for a whole week.
Well,
and there's a certain amount of fear.
Yeah.
Of will I get bored? Will I get anxious and restless? And plus, there's a bear in the area.
Yeah.
I'm really a little bit scared, though. I'm not cute. Big bear.
Big bear.
And so, but mainly, will I be able to be quiet with myself?
Yeah. I was, I actually couldn't quite decide what I was going to do today for a discussion, and I part of me was going to continue with our discussion on fear, and I was going to focus on fear of loneliness and abandonment. So we didn't do that. But I think I'll probably do that next week. Maybe talk a little bit more about Cohen too. So that kind of fear. So that's why monks do solitary retreats, is to kind of work with that fear. They welcome that fear. The part of them that fears is taking care of the part that isn't fear. You're taking care of that by putting yourself in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Those things will deliberately arise. You're putting yourself in that, so just like you do a retreat. You have apprehension. Can you do it? And you're challenging yourself a little bit, but you will learn something about your fear. And even if you don't make it a week, you'll still learn something. You're going into it with more consciousness. So you're practicing the poem. Who's the one that's not afraid of being alone? Who's the one, but the one that is afraid of being alone is actually taking care of that other one. Mm-hmm. Because you're
awake.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. The Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to attain. Thank you all. Enjoy your summer.